Hello, everyone, and welcome to Ripple Conversations, the podcast where we explore what it takes to create meaningful change in our world. I'm your host, Sharon Martis, and today we're tackling a powerful topic, the importance of authentic representation in media, entertainment, and corporate spaces. Representation goes beyond just a checkbox. It is about telling real stories, challenging stereotypes, and fostering inclusive environments. I'm honored to have two extraordinary guests with us today. Dr. Tessie Ojo, she's the commander of the Order of the British Empire and Chief Executive Officer of the Diana Award. And Dr. Zandi Unlovo, she's the founder of Black Mustard Seed and former head of EDI for an international bank and wealth manager. Welcome, ladies. How are you today?
Good.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Let's start with authentic representation and why it matters. Representation can shape how people perceive themselves and others. Can you each please share an example where you saw authentic representation in action and the impact it had on you or your community?
Sure, I'd love to. I'm going to keep it light, though. So my experience, I guess, of authentic representation was really in film. Black Panther being one that I was.
Literally. Oh, my goodness.
That's weird.
We've not prepped.
But I think it's. It demonstrates the power that had, because it was about visibility, being seen, being visible, being validated, and also kind of the negative stereotypes of what typically black people are seen as. It shattered all of that. So it was really about us being sort of technologically advanced. I remember watching it. I didn't really listen to the story the first time I watched it, because I watched it several times. But I felt so proud.
Yes.
I walked out there like inches taller, proud of what my background, my heritage, my culture, my dress, you know, having natural hair, all of those things, I
100%.
Think, for me was like...
It's so funny that we've picked almost the same example, because for me, that was a defining moment around a different black narrative, where in the past, black narrative is always around a struggle, servitude, always from that lens of we've rescued these people, or my backstory, enough of the backstory. Mm-hmm. What Black Panther did was really showing futuristic Africa, was just talking about the black identity from a level playing field, the same way we've had all the superheroes. For me, it was also about, you're right, the clothing, the, you know, coming colorful. I remember me and my girlfriends, we went to watch it. We all wore something amazingly colorful.
Yeah.
We actually changed our WhatsApp group to Wakanda Forever. And we still have it. And suddenly, you just felt so powerful. For me, that Wakanda was something, I don't even know what it means in real life, but it was something that connotated power. I'll tell you, another film that did that for me was The Woman King. That was another moment where I thought, this was very female. So I felt, why Black Panther was about being black and my identity. The Woman King was about, I'm female, I'm powerful, I'm unstoppable, and nothing's going to change. But I know that for myself, right? But having seen that on a screen, seeing the little girls see that, it's not about being the king's wife or the king's concubine or the king's side chick. You are the king. Do you know what I mean? You are the woman king. And it sounds so ordinary, but when you come from a place where the most representation you see is from a negative place, where for the average, for the majority, they're used to seeing, they have that. It felt like a privilege to suddenly see this, which it shouldn't be a privilege,
right
it should be your everyday,
it should be normalized.
100%
Absolutely. I think if I just give a quick work example, because I know we're talking about media and corporate, I spent 15 years working in South Africa, and it was post apartheid, so we'd just seen the first black president Mandela come through, and we were now in the Mbeki era, and I chose to go and work out in South Africa. And I worked at a university that was historically black university, so I had a black vice chancellor, I had black academics, black professional staff. And then again, having come from the city here in London, where you're kind of one of a few, having, you know, that sort of level of education and authority was just so inspiring and empowering to me, because I could then say, well, I can do this. I can be this,
Representation matters.
Representation really matters.
And it's interesting how you both coincidentally
had
that Black Panther.
It was a significant moment.
Yeah, there was a significant
moment. It really was. Can I share another quick story around that? I was speaking to a team of head teachers in a London borough, which I'm not going to mention just to protect them. But in the morning, I went to speak at a college. And I'll talk about that later. But in this, when I was speaking to the head teachers yesterday evening, we were talking about leadership and from the lens of equity. And there was one Black head teacher. She wasn't a head teacher. She's head of faculty in a, and she's a Black lady, in a very South London borough, which is very diverse, very mixed. However, when she was appointed to that role, she just realized that the students came around her window and they peeped through. And she didn't really understand what they were doing. And I think by the fourth or fifth time, she decided, I'm going to confront these kids.
Like, why what, they, looking
at. What are they doing?
Yeah.
And she came out, she said to them, girls, what's going on? And the girls said, Miss, rumor has it that there's a Black senior management staff in the school, but we've never seen it, we don't believe it, and so every day we've been checking this out. Miss, is it true? And she said, yes, I'm the new head of faculty. And the girl said to her, Miss, is this your office? They went, she goes, yes. And it's like, when she says yes, the girls go, yes. And they ask her this one final question. She goes, Miss, does that mean that white teachers report to you? And she goes, well, I don't see it that way. I see that I have a team that we work together. And the girl says, so basically, you're their boss. And she didn't ask her. But the girls turned around and go, yay! And they ran. And but she said she was very, this is a inner London school.
Right.
These girls were like year 11. So they would be about, what, 15, 16. They had never, ever in their history of that school had a Black senior leader. What does that tell them? She said she was so shocked. The fact that she almost became something that was the girl. They kept checking it out. Like, is it true? Is it true? Is it real?
They had to see it to believe it. It's interesting because that goes back to the movie that you guys were talking about, Black Panther. You had, when you saw it, you felt something very powerful, which also then, you know, brings us to stereotypes, right? Like, how do stereotypes in media and entertainment, like these movies, reinforce biases in society? Or in the opposite, you know, it reinforced something good. So
I think, I mean, there's several places that those biases show up. They show up in corporate, in sort of recruitment and promotion of staff. They show up in the criminal justice system in terms of harsher sentencing. They show up in education, so, you know, people having access or not having access, or even the expectations that are placed on Black kids, for example, to say you can achieve this or you can't. So I think, you know, far-reaching implications of stereotyping, what your experience is.
Well, no, absolutely. I think stereotype is so dangerous, because what stereotype does, it completely generalizes or minimizes a whole group of people, reduces them to a couple of sentences. And those sentences are never in a positive way. And what, let's go back to what does, where does stereotype come from? Stereotype is about language and power. The domineering group, the group that has power, uses language to minimize a group for their own good. If you look at generations, we're talking about representation in the broadest sense. If you think about, look, we just only celebrated Holocaust Day a few days ago. What happened in the Holocaust was all around minimizing a group of people, reducing a group of people to a few words. And the thing, the danger is that when it starts with people who have power, they give permission to everybody else to carry out that act. So when in the media, every time a crime happens and only when it's a Black person the race is mentioned,
right,
the headline is, this Black man did X. It completely tells you the story of Black. Because when a white person commits crime, what you hear is a crime was committed. It doesn't mention the race. So what you constantly hear associated with crime becomes Black and crime. paints a picture in your head. Now, whether you like it or not, you, the listener, takes that on. I take it on as well, because oh, this is where it comes to internalized oppression. Mm-hmm. I don't hear anything different from you. Mm. When the media says this race is X, directly or indirectly, you hear it, I hear it.
Right. Mm.
You believe it, I believe it. Mm. I then have to work twice as hard to almost deal with that internally to say that's not me. I'm not going to let that label stick.
So you mentioned the risk of misinterpretation. How do we counteract that then?
So I would love to give you a formula. But I think that... And I want to say something with all humility and all sincerity. Up until this day, the pressure lies on the group that the lie is being told to counter the narrative. Mm. I have to show up every day proving myself to you that I'm not the narrative that you've been told.
What that looks like
for me, if I flip it back to, let's take, what's that guy's name that had his knee on his neck?
Right.
George Floyd. What that looks like is your knee stays on my neck every single day because I'm having to show up every day ready to defend myself, ready to say to you, look, for example, the other day I love matcha. Everyone listening, if you wanted to get me coffee, I want matcha. So I showed up at this coffee shop to get myself a matcha. Didn't realize that I had left my card in the office. I was just on my lunch break. And I thought, oh, damn, I've left my... Anyway, this girl at the till, beautiful, beautiful girl. I said to her, I had placed the order. I even bought two. And she had run it through and it was about £9. And she said to me, and I began to look for my wallet. And I'm like, oh my goodness, please cancel, cancel, cancel. I forgot. And she looks at me and she says, I'll pay for you. You can bring it back. And I'm like, no, honestly, don't worry. Like, I'll go back to the office. She goes, no, it's cool. Pay forward, pay to somebody else. I'll pay for you. And at that moment, I looked at her, it's a young black girl, and I just thought, I see, you saw me. Yes. You know that this auntie, right. who I don't know from anywhere, looks so responsible that I don't think she's trying to play one on me, right? Me saying, oh, don't worry, it's me always trying to prove that I'm not trying to play one on you. Like, I do have £9. It's not that deep. Like, that's a small example. But every day I show up, I have to show up almost working hard to convince you that I'm not the story that you've been told.
And that's because stereotypes reduce individuals to one-dimensional characters.
So if you're asking me, how do we combat this? Right? It's not on me. I didn't tell you that story.
Society
told you. Those who have power told you that story. They need to untell that story. Yes. You need to work hard on yourself to find the right story. I'm tired of having to retell you a different, to say, no, that's not me. Because the truth is that every day I show up, trying to tell you that I'm decent, I'm responsible, I'm good, I know my stuff, I'm clever, I'm brilliant, I've got 3 degrees, I've got a PhD. It's exhausting.
I 100% agree with everything that you said. I think I've now in my life come to a stage where I don't feel that I have to keep telling my story.
Yeah.
And I think I, overcompensated. So yeah, also 3 degrees, I'm a qualified accountant, I'm this, I'm that, I'm doctor. But who am I trying to prove that to?
Right.
Because I can't satisfy everybody. Mm-hmm. So I think it's all of our responsibility.
Right.
To change the narrative.
I don't really care anymore. If you want to know me, know me. I don't have the pressure that I had when I was in my
20s. Right. Yeah.
I don't because as you say, I feel validated in myself. I know who I am. I'm audacious, I'm bold, I don't need. But when I say that pressure, I know the pressure on the younger people.
Yeah.
I work predominantly with young people. I know the pressure on them. Mm. I've got 2 children in their 20s in the workplace. I know the pressure they feel, that they always feel that they have to work twice as hard, that they don't get the kind of grace that other people get. They know that in their appraisals, they're judged harshly, their errors are amplified and their achievements are minimized. This is what they go through.
So what would you tell them, like in your own personal example, what strategies have been effective for you in pushing the nuances to have fairer representation? What would you tell the 20-year-olds?
I would say this, right? Mm-hmm. There's two things. They have to survive. They have to survive. They have to navigate the system. I would say two things to them, and I have the privilege of speaking to both audiences. For them, I would say, keep pushing. Keep doing what you're doing. Work hard. Write down your achievements. When they minimize it, you tell them, put in an email, remind them, do a wrap report at the end of your week or at the end of your month so that people see your achievement. If no one tells your story, you tell it. You know, I would tell them all of that. But if I have the opportunity to speak to their bosses, which I from time to time I do, I tell them the pressure of their lack of recognition. I tell them what it means when you have to walk through a system without equity. I tell them what the pressure, especially when we live in a society that recognizes the impact of that we are in a global mental health crisis. What you do to me is you add on. I already carry an invisible bag that you don't see, right? So that's, I have the privilege of doing both. But when, if we really want to move the lens, if we want to shift the dial and look at this from a lens of equity, we need to release the people who are oppressed. Right. We need to release them of the pressure of retelling their story.
Dr. Zande, what would you tell those 20-year-olds?
So I worked at an international bank and wealth manager, and I was in charge of graduate recruitment and development. So I had a number of graduates under my wing for the first 15 months navigating the complexities of financial services and the culture of financial services. And after about 2 years, I started to see people drop off, mainly people of color and women.
Why?
And I started asking them that question because I was curious about what it was that we weren't doing, but also that they were doing and seeing what I had 20 years before. And I was like, well, what, you know, why hasn't this changed? Three reasons that they came up with. One was the lack of representation. And not because I just want to see someone who looks like me in a higher position, but because it signals to me that I can't grow here. That it's going to be too difficult for me to navigate and develop and be promoted. So I'd rather go elsewhere. So that was the first reason. The second reason was that depending on what team I was in and whether I had an inclusive leader or not, I would have a good time or I wouldn't have. And it was little examples like I'd be taking, you know, I as a black person might be taken to clients or not, and my white colleagues might be taken to clients or not. So there were those instances. And then the third was around experiences of microaggressions, whether it was implicit or quite explicit. And for those reasons, they said, actually, you know what, I don't want to be here. So at that stage, we were still just focusing on the diversity part and not on the inclusion part. And that kind of kicked off a conversation about, well, what do we do to create an inclusive environment? But I think just to go back to your original questions, one of the things, I think three things I would probably say to people is around speak up. If these experiences happen to you, speak up. And you might not feel comfortable doing that with your immediate line manager. So find a space to do that. And it might be through your employee representation or resource group or some other colleagues or an ally. The second thing I'd say to them is role model. So if you're in a leadership position, role model, lift people up behind you, advocate for people. And the third thing, which is what you've said, is around document discrimination, because what happens is you'll have all the experiences and think that they're nothing, and then you'll leave without having actually communicating what happened to you. So an exit interview is a great place for you to be able, if you've decided now that you know you don't want to be here, it's a great place for you to say, well, these things have happened, but ideally say it while you're there. So those are
and you see, one of the real good things about documenting, especially your achievement, is sometimes you never get told them. And then this affects your own confidence.
Right.
So I, like I say to my children, every week, make sure you capture your achievements.
Yeah.
Because that's good for your own self-worth.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you leave a place feeling that when your errors are amplified all the time and your achievements are minimized, you say, oh, I remember my daughter talking about a conversation she had once and someone said, oh, but you didn't quite lead that thing. Somebody else, she goes, what does lead mean? Let's define it. I was the only person from this office that did that project. And I brought it here and I taught everybody. So how else do I qualify lead?
Right.
Why are you grappling? Why does it ick you that I use a word when I was the only person in this entire office that led on this project from this, and I represented this office. When I say I led the project here, why does that ick you? And so, but capture your achievement. Even if no one tells you, at least you have it.
Right.
And you can articulate that for yourself. When you use it for your next application, you have your own record of achievement. Because if no one, you know, there's an African proverb, and I don't quite remember it, but it says something about, if you notice the lizard is always nodding.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because nobody ever tells the lizard that it's great. So it just has a way of celebrating its own achievement and constantly nodding its head. I don't know if it's true, but I really love that because it says something about, look, celebrate yourself if nobody else celebrates you.
Yeah. And you both have given us lovely actionable steps that can actually be used. And these actionable steps are more for individuals. What actionable steps can organizations take, you know, to create a more inclusive environment, especially in the media, entertainment, and corporate spaces? You both have worked in these spaces. What would you tell an organization leader?
Yeah, I think there's so many things. We could be here all day, but I think
if you narrow it down to two or three,
I would say that it needs to be part of your corporate strategy, because what happens, tends to happen, is it gets outsourced to HR, to the head of EDI or others, and not you know, it's not embedded within the corporate strategy. And then the second thing I'd say that would be on my list of things would be about accountability, that actually leaders and everyone need to take accountability, and that needs to be documented, needs to be measured, needs to be, have, you know, continuously so, and not just a one or done sort of approach.
100%. I think you've taken one of the points that I had. Mm-hmm. I think we need to look at this from a place of belonging. We have to commit to creating environments where everyone feels that they belong. Mm-hmm. And the first thing to do is to find out who doesn't feel that at the moment. So we need to firstly audit ourselves. I mean, all of that comes under a robust EDI strategy.
So if you don't feel like you're included or represented, how do you change the system?
Well, first, you measure, you've asked.
Mm-hmm.
Then you go back to the people who don't feel included and you begin to ask them, two things. You ask the people who feel included, what does it feel like? What does inclusion feel like to you? Because you are happy. You say you feel included. What does that look like for you? Then ask the people who don't feel included to tell you, what does that look like for them? You can easily tell the difference. The difference would be things like, oh, I get praise. I feel like I can progress. I feel like I get on with my peers. You begin... Some of these things aren't rocket science. You know, some of these things is about what makes one person thrive in this environment and how do we replicate that for everybody? Or how do we include those who don't feel included? How do we understand why they don't feel included so that they do? All of that should feed into your EDI strategy. I often liken it to a manifesto. You know, when you're about to have a new government, they produce this document of what they would do.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they get elected, everyone, including the media, begins to hold them accountable. I was listening to the news this morning and there was something about energy prices are going to rise. Yes. And immediately they were saying, well, the Labour Party talked about this in their manifesto. They said energy prices are going to come down. And we were holding them accountable because they wrote it down. The first way to create an inclusive environment, write it down. Tell me what you're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then begin to work towards it. But open yourself up to be accountable. Your leaders have to be accountable. They have to be transparent. This has to come from the top.
Can I just give an example? So just in terms of the doctorate that I did, what I was trying to understand, I did a professional doctorate, which is work-based. I was trying to understand why was it that all the diversity and inclusion training that we do doesn't change behavior.
Mm.
That was my principal question. And what I did was I interviewed young people in their first year of work. And what I then decided to do, instead of having training that always just said, this is unconscious bias, this is that, and everyone nods and they agree and they get it, but when they go back to their desk, they actually don't practice any of that. So what I did was I created a play as an alternative way of people engaging with a subject that can be quite complex. And what the play does is that it shows the complexities and nuances of what it's like to be excluded and included. It also gives you a sense of the emotional reality behind data, because we can have the data. I'm saying, you know, we've got X number of people in X roles, and why don't we? So it's been a really powerful tool as a way of people then witnessing what it's like to be in this organization. It's based on real stories of real people, but really shifted the dial in terms of having the basis for dialogue around what it means, because it isn't necessarily the big things that we need to do, but it's just the day-to-day interactions that we have with individuals and their human dignity. It's as simple as that.
It's interesting you said that, because when I have the opportunity to do lots of talks with corporates, I don't talk about inclusion. I talk about belonging, because belonging is something we all want.
Right.
We all feel. We want to feel seen. I don't want to be a number. I don't want to be a number. Say, oh, 35% of our staff are Black. Great. How do they feel though?
Do they feel like they belong?
Do they feel that they belong? And when you come to a conversation from a place of belonging, every single person is relatable, because you want to feel like you belong. I want to. And then let's begin to look at this, because that comes back to how I feel, what my everyday day-to-day is. And when I begin to I say to people, tell me what it feels like when you're at home. And everyone tells you, you know, when you can take off your shoes and nobody judges you, you can have any food and no one says, oh, that smells funny. And it's those nuances. And we begin to bring it back into the workplace.
Right. It builds a culture too.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yes. Ladies, as we close, I want to ask you both for one key takeaway you want listeners to remember about the power of authentic representation and the role they can play in creating it. Dr. Zandi?
Yeah, I think it's kind of what I was saying just at the end of the last question, which is really about, it doesn't have to be about the big gestures. It's about the small, everyday decisions that we make, because we've got opportunities to include or exclude. And that, you know, everyone should take responsibility for the other person.
Dr. Tessie?
I would say that it's a privilege to not have to carry the baggage of constantly wanting to tell your story. And if you have that privilege, I need you to understand that not everyone has that. Use that every privilege that you have sometimes comes at my expense. Think about it. Use that privilege. I don't really like the word ally. Because ally sometimes says, I choose you to ally with you. Whereas I want people to just be a champion. Understand that this is about humanity. Understand that when I can walk through the shop, when you can walk through the shop and no one follows you, when you see a young Black boy being followed in the shop, ask the shop assistant, why are you following him? So every privilege that you enjoy, I want you to be aware, conscious that does everybody else enjoy that? And when you see that something's happened to someone that doesn't happen to you, immediately ask, step in. Don't make an assumption that he must be a thief, because that's what you assume, right? You see the Black boy being followed, and you think, oh, he's probably still in there before. I promise you he hasn't.
So then with all everything you've said, then how do we stay hopeful and committed to progress?
Yeah, I mean, I'm always maybe a bit too optimistic. I mean, my parents were political activists. They fought for the liberation of their country. I am one generation away from extreme poverty. So I'm very hopeful.
Which country?
Zimbabwe.
Zimbabwe.
Yeah. So I'm very hopeful. I know this is a marathon and it's not a sprint. So I just try to keep that positive attitude. There's Maya Angelou has a poem around our grandmothers. And one line is something about, I am one of 10,000. They are our ancestors. There are so many people who came before us and we stand on their shoulders. So I have to be only but positive.
Yeah. I have two things keep me hopeful. I have a privilege of working with young people. And when I see those lives change, when I stepped into that school yesterday and I could speak to over 200 students, speak to them to say, look, I'm a chief executive, and speak to them. And some of the girls came up to say, we've never met a female boss. I know that that I've left an impact in their lives. The other thing that I hold on to very much is a starfish story. And the starfish story is a story of a young man and his son walking down the beach. And they saw so many, the waves had, or the sea had washed off the starfishes out of the sea. And so there were lots of them on the beach. And this boy was perplexed by the complexity of this fish and was like, how are we going to save all of this? And his dad says, let's just try one at a time. Let's just try one at a time. Let's put one at a time back. And hopefully if we put one back, even if the others don't survive, that one would reproduce and have many more. And so every day I ask myself, did I touch a life today? Give another child a hope? Or if not, not even a child, another woman, another person, human, did I even change, hopefully, one of your listeners who understands their role in shifting the dial? That gives me hope.
One human at a time.
One human at a time.
And we'll keep the hope going.
100%.
Thank you so much, Dr. Tessie and Dr. Zandi, for your invaluable insights today. And thank you to our listeners for joining us today. Representation matters because it shapes the world we live in. Until next time, let's keep breaking barriers.